Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas Podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada. I'm a perimenopausal mama to my toddler named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Toni Reed. I'm a naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Alberta. And I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie.
Hello, perimenopausal mamas. Today, we are going to talk about nutrition. And I have a feeling we're going to touch base on nutrition, and there'll be a lot more episodes down the road. Because nutrition is a huge topic, and I'm sure you can tell. And also, nutrition has a really, really huge impact on your hormone balance. So when we're talking about hormones and when we're talking about perimenopause, we definitely need to talk about the food that we eat. And when we talk about the food that we eat as perimenopausal mamas, often it's not necessarily super easy to eat healthy. There can be a bunch of different issues, right, Lisa?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Like, it's already hard enough without having kids trying to make meals and stay on top of the newest, like, health trends, what is healthy, what's not. But now it's like no time, no energy. So let's like jump right into the issues that, you know, perimenopausal mamas face in terms of eating healthy and then what we can do about it and what some healthy meals and snacks look like.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think back to, it's one of those things where you think back to, well, what did I do before kids? I had all this extra time. Why wasn't I like eating perfectly and doing everything else perfectly? Because now that there's kids, there's can be way less time. You're running around and especially if you're, picking up from, daycare or picking up from school or that kind of thing, there's a lot more kind of driving around, running around, getting them organized and generally less time to do a lot of things, especially preparing food and cooking healthy meals and that kind of thing.
For sure. Yeah. It could feel really overwhelming, like making those decisions, running out to the grocery store. So one thing I found that really helps our family is on Sundays, or actually on Saturday mornings, we'll go through what we're going to eat for the week for dinner. I have my lunches here, so I work from home. Pete usually eats his lunch out, but we'll go through what we're eating for dinners. And breakfast is pretty static for us. So we'll make up the grocery list, do the shopping on Saturday, and then we know exactly what we're making when. So I find that saves us a lot of time instead of having to run out to the grocery store every few days, trying to decide last minute once we've done preschool pickup what we're going to eat. And, we don't want to push dinner time too late because then that throws the whole routine off. But that's really worked for us. What about you, Toni? What's working for your family with that time crunch in terms of still eating healthy?
For sure. I still find that weekends are a really great time to just get some batch cooking in, have a sense of looking at what the week is going to be and getting in some meals down pat and even, thinking about kind of those snacks and getting some prep done. Usually that's a Sunday night kind of activity and even, having a chat, with me and my partner on Sunday to say, okay, what are we going to be eating for the rest of the week? And then kind of go from there. If we haven't done any grocery shopping, on Saturday, even just, a quick pop out on Sunday to get stuff ready. So that's usually, a start of the week kind of thing too.
For sure. Yeah, just take that little bit of time and it saves you time in the long run. And I have to admit, like, our meals have gotten a little bit boring. Like, I typically eat the same thing for breakfast and we give Stuart, one of 3 to 4 options for breakfast as well. So there is some automation and repetition. And then we do try to mix it up with dinners and I'll try to add in different spices or herbs or use different types of vegetables or protein. But there's a bit of a little bit boring, but we'll throw in a new recipe every few weeks into the rotation. But we have, common meals that we make on a regular basis. But that's what we can do right now. We enjoy Saturday nights is where we get creative and we can make something different and try something new together.
Yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, I mean, I'm definitely a big fan of some tried and true recipes, but that's even where, again, if things are getting boring, if you're kind of looking for something new beyond what you usually do, I mean, that's where there's a ton of resources out there in terms of, you know, different sites with recipes. And I even think of, you know, there's different magazines that you can kind of flip through to get, you know, ideas as well, just to kind of add, you know, one or two new things in every once in a while can be great to kind of spice things up. And all of that prep and all of that kind of pre-planning is really perfect, because so often, especially in the middle of the week, we get, or at the end of a long day when it's supper time, we can get into this rut of like, I don't have energy to make anything. I don't have energy to put together a healthy meal. And when it's all ready and all prepared, then that no energy kind of issue that can come up doesn't really matter, because it's already there. It's already done.
For sure. I'm a big fan of leftovers too. So we make larger amounts of food than we would normally make. And Pete used to not be a huge fan of having the same thing for dinner two nights in a row. He's a real foodie, but now he really appreciates the convenience. There's less time, energy, and less cleanup too. So that's definitely...
for sure, convenience wins over excitement and change all the time for me.
I agree. Yeah, it's amazing too how quickly the dishes can pile up. So if you're making something new every single dinner, it's just exhausting. So yeah, I like that idea of finding ways to save time and save energy. So having leftovers is definitely a big component, and planning as well. And then just stocking up the freezer, I find, is really handy too. Like, I know frozen foods have gotten a bit of a bad rap, but you can buy really good frozen organic vegetables that you can quickly defrost. There's cooking greens that you can saute with some eggs. Those are really quick and easy meals that you can have. They even have some good frozen protein options from local health food stores where they're not full of a lot of like crap and ingredients that you don't recognize what they are. So I've definitely been getting more frozen, healthier foods that are still whole foods. So not, you know, breaded things or artificial flavors added, but that can be a good option in a bind, especially when you're exhausted. You just, you know, those pan meals or pan sheet meals where you just throw the protein on, you throw on some veggies, you throw it in the oven and cook it, and you have a whole meal there ready to go.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. Frozen foods have definitely gotten a bad rap. And there was this, I know even some people have kind of hold on to this idea that frozen veggies or frozen fruit have way less nutritional value than fresh veggies and fresh fruit. And that isn't always necessarily the case. Oftentimes, frozen veggies and fruit have almost equal nutritional value as the fresh fruit and veggies. So, I mean, especially living in Canada, when the growing season isn't super long, you know, winter can feel very long sometimes. And it's just not possible to get fresh, especially more local fresh foods. That's where, you know, doing some frozen foods can be really handy, and you're not necessarily losing out on a lot of nutrients that way.
Yeah, that's a great point, because they can freeze it right when the fruit or the vegetable is the most ripe and the most fresh. So it preserves those nutrients. Whereas if you're getting food from California in the dead of winter in Canada, how is it getting here? How long does it take to get here? And then everything's degrading and breaking down and you don't have the same nutrient profile. So that's a good point. Frozen foods still can be healthy. Definitely avoiding canned foods. Those tend to be devoid of nutrients and full of preservatives, but frozen is another good option.
Yeah. And not necessarily talk about like frozen meals or that kind of thing. That's where you can get a lot of those preservatives and extra sugars and extra salt and extra stuff that you don't necessarily want in your food.
For sure. And then thinking about throwing in those frozen meals or microwave meals, heating up plastics and things that can definitely wreak havoc on your hormones because they act as estrogen mimickers. So they disrupt your hormone balance. But that could be a whole other topic.
Yeah. And definitely we don't want that. So
no, not at all. So yeah, it brings us to the point. Like we wonder, you know, what is healthy or what is not healthy? We hear so many things and I have so many moms come to me. They've just kind of given up. They're like, well, I try to eat healthy, but then I start eating one way and I hear that's going to, you know, contribute to high cholesterol or that's going to contribute to weight gain. So I know there's a lot of confusion. So what are some foods that you think are healthy, Tony, or what's a healthy way of eating for people in general?
Well, and you know, and this is where sometimes that can be a challenge because it can be a little bit different for each person. But there's definitely some you know rules or some guidelines that you can kind of follow in terms of what to look at, and that really is, you know, balancing out the macronutrients in your food. And maybe I should just even talk about macronutrients right now. What the heck are macronutrients? And that's where we're talking about the protein, the fat, and the carbohydrates. Those are the three main categories or the three, you know, macronutrients in our food. And that's where you can go a little bit deeper into each of those macronutrients, whether it's animal-based or plant-based, especially for fat and for protein. Fat, you know, we have our healthy unsaturated and even saturated fats, and then our unhealthy trans fats or hydrogenated fats. And then there's our carbohydrates. And that's where you can look at your simple refined carbohydrates and your more complex carbohydrates like fiber. And looking at the balance of each of those can be different for each person, especially depending on your own individual genetics, what else is going on with you, your digestive system. So, you know, really, I find that what can really help to kind of navigate all of that is actually, you know, seeing either, you know, a naturopathic doctor, a nutritionist, a nutrition consultant can really kind of help to kind of navigate that, especially if you're really confused by all of the information out there that seems contradictory sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is no one size fits all. It's really about what feels right for you, for your body, for your lifestyle. You know, what phase of life are you in? Are you breastfeeding? Are you pregnant? That's going to change your macronutrient requirements. I know.
Absolutely.
I definitely needed more carbohydrates when I was pregnant and breastfeeding than I do now. More complex carbohydrates, so slow release glucose carbohydrates that give you sustained energy, not like the simple carbohydrates like you mentioned, Tony, which are, you know, are the processed foods, the processed oatmeals that basically just spike your blood sugars and then you crash. But yeah, it's not a one size fits all. And there really is no one diet that is, you know, the master diet that's going to cure everything. But there definitely is some good guidelines, as Tony mentioned, to follow. So basic guidelines I usually like to explain to patients is, can you aim for half of your plate to be vegetables? Ideally, you know, some green vegetables in there, leafy greens, broccoli, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, kale, etc. And for those hormone balancing foods, definitely the brassica families of vegetables. So those are the ones that contain sulfur and they might give you, you know, a little bit of smelly gas, but they help you detox excess and bad types of estrogens. So things like broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, etc. are really key for estrogen detox. And then about a quarter of your plate being some healthy form of protein. So whether it's wild caught fish, whether it's organic free-range chicken, grass-fed beef. If you're vegetarian or vegan, you can do more sprouted beans and legumes, for example. And then another quarter of your plate can be more complex carbohydrates. And I tend to go more for starchy vegetables for that portion of the plate, whether it's sweet potatoes, squash, carrots, beets are good. Also hormone detoxifiers. But that's a good baseline to follow. Half your plate vegetables. You definitely want to get in some healthy sources of protein and then some starchy vegetables or some complex carbohydrates, and then putting on some healthy fats on there too. So whether it's, you know, avocado oil, olive oil, avocado on your salads or vegetables, nuts and seeds. You could cook with ghee if you're okay with dairy or coconut oil. But that's kind of the baseline I like people to follow. Did I miss anything, Tony?
No, I think you got everything covered in that sense, Lisa. Absolutely.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And, you know, I find like a big goal to really look at is, you know, for covering your bases nutritionally with your foods, having it quick and easy, but also what is a real bonus is eating the same foods that your kids are eating, mm-hmm. so that you're not necessarily making food for the kids and then making food for yourself. And, you know, that's where starting them early can be really key. I'm sure you have way more tips on this, Lisa, than I do. But really getting kids used to having the foods that you're eating at the same time can just really make it easy as well.
For sure. Yeah, it was difficult starting out introducing solids to Stuart because we're, you know, you don't have to start with purees or necessarily like really, really mushy foods, but that's typically what people do, and typically less flavorful, less spices, and then build up their tolerance in terms of like texture and spices and flavors. So in the beginning, it was challenging, but now Stuart really just wants to eat what we're eating. If we give him something different, he's usually not that interested in it. So I think it's just exposure. He still might have had in the beginning, you know, something a little different from us, but then one or two things that we were having, and then slowly it evolved that we would aim to eat the same meal every single time. So, but yeah, definitely in the beginning phases, it can be more challenging. And he, you know, he doesn't eat a salad like we do. And if you listen right. to the episode with Amanda Beattie, nutritionist, she has some good strategies on how to get your kids to eat greens and salads, because I find that is a really big challenge. But he definitely does eat a lot of the other vegetables and foods that we eat, and really can tolerate spices and different cuisines as well. So it has worked out. And we'll do a whole other episode on how to just make it easier for your kids to enjoy unique foods. And you can also listen to that episode with Amanda Beattie, the nutritionist, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and that's where even... I don't know if you found also the idea of keeping us full with the foods that we eat may be a little bit different than with kids. I mean, especially because they are really growing, you really want to make sure that they're getting, you know, the calories in, where we really may need to, you know, getting into perimenopause and really supporting our metabolism, you really do need to look at your portions and the balances of those macronutrients, the protein, the fats, you know, the carbohydrates, especially those complex carbohydrates like fiber, so that we're feeling full, we're feeling, you know, satiated from our meals, but we're also balancing our blood sugar.
Mm-hmm. That's so key. Good point.
Really key. You know, I find with when I'm feeding my daughter Frankie, I'm not worrying necessarily so much about kind of, you know, spiking her blood sugar with fruit or with grains or that kind of thing. You know, she needs a lot of carbohydrates. She's going to burn them really fast. She's a mover. Maybe not so much with myself. And that's where I like to really focus on making sure that I'm getting a lot of low glycemic foods. And that's often what I will recommend to women, to really preventing those kind of spikes and dips of your blood sugar, so that you're not kicking in a lot of excess insulin. You know, insulin is released by our pancreas to help to balance our blood sugar so that it doesn't go too high. And when that insulin is released, then it actually helps to lower our blood sugar and also helps to grow our body fat stores. And that's not necessarily something that a lot of us want to have. So really, you know, making sure that we're not having high glycemic foods or sugary foods. And especially when we're talking about any kind of processed foods or foods in packages, you really want to look at the label to look for added sugars. Looking on the ingredients list is important. And I've come across this where, you know, I've picked up what I've thought is a healthy snack, a healthy processed snack. And then on the ingredients list, yeah, there's cane sugar or there's evaporated cane juice. Or even, you know, glucose, fructose, or you know, the other sugars that end with O-S-E. And it's disappointing because it's like, oh, I thought this was healthy, but no, there is some added sugar in there. You know, the same with things like salsas and that kind of thing and other sauces that you may buy. There are brands that don't have added sugar. It's not like everything has sugar in them. So reading the label can really help that way.
For sure. Yeah, those are very important points. Yeah, there is something called like greenwashing where things are made to sound healthy. There's so many kids' snacks and cereals and bars out there that, yeah, they may be organic, they may be nut-free or free of the food allergens. But when you look at the label, it is astounding how much sugar is in there. There could be, you know, the same amount of sugar as in half a chocolate bar, for example, and there can be minimal protein, like 2 grams of protein, minimal fat. It's just, it still can be full of junk, even if it says, you know, gluten-free, nut-free, organic. Ideally, your food is real food, whole food, and it's not in a package. And I think, you know, down the road, we'll share some recipes on our website as well to give you some ideas of healthy homemade snacks that you can bring. But all of these definitely throw off blood sugar levels. And there's so many marketed to adults as well. And how you start your day is really, really key because most people do start their day with a high carbohydrate, high sugar breakfast, even if it is oatmeal and maple syrup, a little bit of milk and berries. You know, there's really no protein in there. There's really no healthy fat. And that's what's needed to stabilize your blood sugar. So you have a slow release of energy, a slow release of sugar. So if you're looking at changing any specific meal to balance blood sugar levels, definitely start with breakfast. You know, you might go for a couple of hard-boiled eggs or super quick and easy in a bind with a bit of avocado, maybe a few berries on the side, or even having something more savory like some sautéed greens or an omelet too. So good ways to bump up the protein and healthy fat. Tony, what are some of your favorite energizing, low glycemic breakfast ideas?
Yeah, definitely. You know, eggs can be really great. And then there can be an issue if, you know, some people don't really do well with eggs or don't like eggs. Then I look at, you know, more of, especially if someone is really used to having cereal in the morning, that's like, okay, instead have some more higher protein cereals or porridges, something with quinoa. And then add some extra protein and fat on top, whether it's whole nuts, or I'm a big fan of putting hemp seed and chia seed on top of porridge along with some fruit. Then you're getting that protein, you're getting the healthy fats, as well as, you know, some fiber too, which is really great to, you know, really feel full, feel satiated, and have that slow release of sugar over the morning so that you're not, you know, looking for, you know, something to eat in a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's key. Like, we did move towards the idea of eating every 2 to 3 hours, but we're realizing now for body repair, for, you know, keeping us young and healthy, for weight loss, we really want to eat a large enough meal that we're full for 4 or 5 hours. So our blood sugar doesn't dip between meals and we don't need that, you know, 10 a.m. snack or necessarily that afternoon snack, although I still need an afternoon snack because, you know, by the time we do preschool pickup and get home, I don't have enough energy to play with Stuart at the park if I don't have a little snack in the afternoon. But having a big enough meal where you're full for 4 to 5 hours is really key. And yeah, Tony, as you were saying, those are some great options to add the hemp seeds, the chia seeds. I even tell people you can add a tablespoon of collagen powder or pumpkin seed protein or hemp protein to your oatmeal or cereal if you really are in a bind and in a rush. So you can do that. And my breakfast go-to, which I've been doing for a while, is a coconut chia pudding. And I actually add some protein powder, a little bit of collagen powder, a little bit of pumpkin seed protein. I don't need to add anything sweet. My taste buds have adjusted to not needing a little bit of extra, you know, maple syrup or coconut sugar in there. But that keeps me full from, I'll eat breakfast at about 7 o'clock, and then I won't have lunch till about noon or so, sometimes even a bit later. And that keeps me full all morning. So it's figuring out what's going to make you full, what's quick and easy, and what's going to prevent that blood sugar dip, that energy crash.
Yeah, I'm definitely a big fan of adding a little bit of protein powder to any kind of milk. You know, whether it's a nut milk or an oat milk or something like that, just to, again, get that little extra protein there in there so that, you know, it sits longer and keeps you going longer for sure.
For sure.
Another bonus of, you know, some of the things, especially something like chia seed, it not only will have, you know, some fiber and some protein in it, it also contains an amino acid called tryptophan, which is really important for our serotonin production that helps with our mood. It's kind of our happy hormones. So you can get those nutrients in chia seeds, sesame seeds. So that's a little extra bonus in terms of what you can add into your food to not only keep you full, but also to support your energy, support your mood, and make you happier.
And yeah, good point to mention tryptophan, because a lot of people typically, well, I don't want to say females, but typically females aren't getting necessarily enough protein. And we need the amino acid tryptophan from protein to make serotonin, to make melatonin, to make our hormones as well, and to keep them balanced. So it's looking at getting protein in with every meal. It doesn't necessarily have to be animal protein, but balancing that, and then good sources too, like fish, like wild caught salmon. So not only are you getting the amino acid tryptophan, but you're also getting omega-3. So those fish oils can really help with mood, stabilizing blood sugar. So a nice long burn of energy during the day.
Absolutely. You know, the idea of, again, you know, the protein and getting those building blocks for serotonin and our other hormones and supporting our muscle mass. And, you know, that will help us actually burn calories and have our metabolism really supported. It also, you know, our body will use up calories when it digests our food, and protein definitely has a higher thermic effect of food, which is that you know, using calories to break down the food. So you know, there's so many reasons why women need to get that protein in, and yeah, it definitely is important to look at how to fit it in, whether it's animal based like fish or you know, whatever works for your system, chicken, turkey, even, you know, lean grass-fed beef, versus, you know, nuts, soy, eggs, you know, other sources as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really good. Yeah, those are some really good options there. And I know beef has gotten a bad rap, but most of the studies when, you know, beef is shown to be harmful to the heart or to other, contributing to other diseases, it's because the cow is fed grains, sprayed with pesticides. And that's not what cows are supposed to eat. They're supposed to eat grass. They're supposed to live a healthy life, because that changes their fat, their protein, and makes them more inflammatory if they're eating grains and food sprayed with pesticides. So we are what we eat, but we're also what our food eats too. So if you are choosing beef, and I find a lot of females do feel good if they have some grass-fed beef about once a week, just to keep their iron levels up too, but you definitely want to make sure it's from a good source, or else it can be more disease promoting instead of disease preventing.
Absolutely. And you did, you know, touching on kind of inflammation, that's definitely something to look at when you're looking at what foods to eat. You don't necessarily want foods that promote inflammation in the body, and because that can cause more damage, more stress, and really throw off your metabolism and other things going on in your body. And, you know, there's some generalities around that. You know, sugar is definitely pro-inflammatory in the food. For a lot of people, You know, cow dairy can be inflammatory. Gluten can be inflammatory. But really, it can be different for each person. So, so again, that's where sometimes otherwise really healthy foods can promote inflammation in a person. Even, for example, you know, tomatoes and other nightshade family vegetables contain a compound called solanine, which for some people with arthritis and other kind of pain conditions, it can increase pain. Whereas, you know, tomatoes also have an antioxidant called lycopene, a really healthy component, especially to support prostate health in men. So, you know, it's not like, you know, one food is bad and one food is good. You really have to look at, okay, does this food really work for me? Is this food going to promote inflammation? You know, for example, I used to be pretty well known in, especially during naturopathic school, for having almond butter and rice cakes every day. I don't know if you remember that.
I remember that we shared the office in fourth year, and that was your go-to snack. You ate it.
It was my go-to snack in the morning. If I was either in the office or, you know, I would cart it, you know, to class in the morning. I would have a rice cake and almond butter along with a smoothie that had, you know, protein powder and berries in it. And that would be my breakfast. And then I discovered that I am mildly allergic to almonds. Almonds are super healthy, great protein, awesome good fats, super great source of omega-3 fatty acids. And my body does not like almonds. I could still eat them, but, you know, my digestive system would let me know that that was not a good idea. So great healthy food, and I do not do well with almonds, which I'm still kind of sad about.
Oh, they're so delicious.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's definitely a memory I have of you. And I don't know if you remember, but I used to eat eggs all the time. So I love eggs. I would bring hard-boiled eggs to class. I'd eat eggs and omelets for breakfast. And then I started to get a skin rash. So I did the food sensitivity blood test. So that can be controversial, but I found I was reacting to eggs, and I did avoid them in my diet, and then my skin rash went away. So that was beneficial for me to find out. But another way to gauge what your reactions are is doing an elimination diet. So you may not have to eliminate all like major inflammatory foods, but you might go 2 to 4 weeks without having eggs, dairy, and gluten. And then after that washout period, you would introduce one food at a time, having it 1 or 2 times a day for 3 days to see what happens. So the food reaction can show up to 3 days after eating that food. So that's why you spread the reintroduction out by 3 days, each food individually. But inflammation can show up not only as joint pain and headaches, but it can show up as inflammation in the skin, as rashes. It can show up as fatigue and brain fog. It can show up as a weakened immune system, sinus, allergy issues. So it can affect the whole body. And each person is, Tony said, can definitely have different foods that are triggers, and it can change in your life too. So now I avoided eggs for several months, and now I can get away with having them, you know, maybe once or twice a week, and I don't get the same reaction. So I don't think I'll go back to having them every day, but your immune system and your reactions can definitely change over time too.
Absolutely. And your body can handle even maybe a small amount of stress from that food much better after kind of, you know, having that break and supporting your system in other ways too. So that's definitely something that I do all the time with women who come into my office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, diet is the foundation for our health. So that's what fuels every system, every organ in our body. So as naturopaths, we usually start with digestion and figure out what's feeding you, what's harming you, and then even the state that you're eating in. You know, if we're stressed out, we're not going to release stomach acid and enzymes. Our body's not going to break down the food and extract the nutrients properly. So really eating in a relaxed state, taking a lot of deep breaths. You could be eating the healthiest food, but if you're eating in a stressed state, you're not going to get the benefits from your food, and it can cause a lot of digestive distress too.
For sure. And And in that sense, you know, stress and even not getting a great amount of sleep can also really trigger even more sugar cravings too. And really kind of reaching for more of those like simple carb comfort foods. And that's even where, you know, so then really looking at not only the refined sugars that you're eating, but also avoiding any artificial sweeteners that can kind of stimulate to get into that stuck vicious circle of craving and overeating that can happen too.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. Yeah, Tony, because so many people will have diet soda, artificial sweeteners, their body thinks it's getting something sweet, but it's not. And you can actually crave more sweet later and then overeat later to make up for it. So ideally, we get used to less sweet foods, reducing the amount of sweetness in our diet, and hopefully, yeah, being able to avoid a lot of those sugars and obviously anything artificial too.
Absolutely. So you were saying, you know, eggs were definitely a go-to in terms of protein. And then, you know, again, if eggs aren't working for you, then looking for other higher protein foods other than, you know, more meat or other, you know, animal-based proteins, you can definitely look at more plant-based proteins. And definitely, you know, the market has evolved and responded to people's desire for, you know, higher protein foods that are plant-based. So, you know, having things like pasta made of chickpeas or lentils or black beans are there. I'm even a big fan of, you know, instead of having, you know, corn chips or tortilla chips, there's black bean chips that are higher in protein, higher in fiber. You know, so that you can have an alternative to something like, you know, regular wheat pasta, that is, again, you know, can spike the blood sugar and not provide the kind of protein that we really need to keep things balanced and active in the body.
Mm-hmm. Those are some great ideas, Tony. Yeah, the chickpea pasta is a big hit with Stuart, and he is getting more protein, and then you're avoiding the gluten as well. So that's a quick and easy swap. And as you mentioned, you know, you love adding hemp seeds to things. So I'll add it into like Stuart's pasta sauces, into his, we make him some oatmeal balls in the morning. People can add those to salads. So hemp seeds are a really great source of protein, also fiber and omega-3s, but they are higher in protein than chia seeds, and chia seeds are really beneficial, as Tony mentioned, for fiber, for blood sugar balancing, for mood. So those are some quick and easy ways. And then using unprocessed protein powders like a hemp protein, a pumpkin seed protein. There are a bunch of sprouted vegan proteins out there too, if you're making a smoothie or you wanted to add that to your breakfast cereal or oatmeal if you're having that. But there's so many great options out there.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, really getting in some simple protein powders and mixing them in with foods, just to, again, get that little extra punch of protein. And I'm a big fan of hemp protein powder just because also the healthy oils and healthy fats that are in there as well. It's a nice balanced protein powder.
Great. Yeah. Great recommendation. It mixes well and it has like a nice earthy taste. It doesn't have any stevia added. I know some people either love or hate stevia, but it doesn't have that bitter aftertaste.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we didn't talk about water. So that's also key for our energy, for our mood. Do you get enough water, Tony? Are you good with that?
Probably not. I mean, there's some days where I'm awesome and some days where I'm not. And, you know, that whole idea of drinking more water, I know on the days that I drink more water, I just feel better. My energy's better. I feel clearer, my brain feels clearer. And that's where, you know, that idea of like, oh, how do I get that water in? I find that the days that I get more water and feel the best are the days where I've actually prepped some lemon water the night before. I love to have lemon water first thing in the morning. So I'll actually prep a jug, or even I have these nice crafts where, you know, I can cut up a clean lemon, stick it in the water. You know, it takes a minute to do in the evening, and I don't tend to do it in the morning. So if it's there on the counter for me in the morning, I find that I'm much more likely to drink the enough water to you know, fill my needs and get me hydrated in the morning.
I love that. I never thought of actually prepping it the night before. Like if I do it, I'll do it in the morning, but it's not as much of a routine as it used to be when I was in the naturopathic college or when I was just starting out practicing. But I'll still get it in occasionally, but it's definitely not part of my daily routine. So I love that idea. You see it there and you'll drink it.
Absolutely. You know, it's much like food. You know, the more you can prep ahead of time, the more it'll be quick and easy to do, you know, after it's already prepped.
That's perfect. Great tip. Thanks for sharing. Yeah. I find I'm a water guzzler, so I constantly have to have water on me. That's how I make sure I get it in. I have a water glass in the clinic downstairs. I have one in the kitchen up here. I keep one on my nightstand. I always bring my water bottle with me, even if I go for a walk. I'm a bit obsessive like that, but I know a lot of people, it's just not part of their habit. So some tools that can be useful is there's actually some apps out there that can calculate how much water you need. Of course, it's an approximation, but and then you can set reminders to pop up on your phone to tell you to drink water, and you can even track how much you're having. So if you're into technology, that's one way. And then I heard about a really simple way from a chiropractor I met, and she calls it the elastic band method, and it's genius. So if you have a water bottle and you're aiming to, say, have about four of them, if they're 500 mils, hopefully it's a reusable bottle, like a glass or stainless steel, but say you want to have four of those in the day. So you would stick four elastic bands. You could do it either on the top of the water bottle or around the bottom of the water bottle. And then every time you drink one, a full bottle, you shift the elastic band up to the top or the bottom. So you'll move them up or down, and then you'll know how many you've drank and how many you still need to drink. So I thought that was a genius idea too.
That is really cool. And just talking about water is making me thirsty. I'm so tempted to reach over and go glug, 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 but I don't want to make you listen to the sound of me.
And I'm tempted too. I was just looking at my water glass and I thought, oh my gosh, that's the longest I've gone without water today through the whole podcast, but I'll have some after. Definitely. And one key too is when you're eating, you don't want to drink too much water with your food because that can dilute the stomach acid and the enzymes. So if you look at Asian cultures, they typically have like a little bit of warm tea with their meals. So that can help digestion, but you want to get most of your water between meals so you're not diluting the stomach acid and the enzymes, so you can actually break down your food more effectively. But if it comes down to you not drinking water, you know, have it with your meal. But if you're getting gas or bloating, or you don't feel like you're digesting properly, you might tone it down a bit and try to get it more away from meals.
That is a really important point, Lisa. I'm so glad you mentioned that too. And now that it's time for us to drink more water, we may want to wrap up our episode. But before we do, I'd love to share my super mom moment for the week. And it really does relate to all the things that we were talking about metabolism. You know, in the postpartum period, something that a lot of you find challenging is getting rid of that, you know, getting your weight back to your pre-baby weight and being able to fit into your pants. So I am so thankful that, you know, I was ready to clean up what I was eating. I found I was a lot of those extra sugars and extra snacks and unhealthy foods were sneaking into what I was eating every single day. So my partner and I decided, okay, we're going to clean up our diet. We did a bit of a cleanse, you know, a very basic, just kind of cleaning up sugar, alcohol, that kind of thing. And then a few weeks later, now I can take the pants, especially the dress pants that I used to wear in the office, put them on, and they actually fit.
Amazing. Great job, Tony. Wow, that work paid off. And yeah, it sounds like it wasn't too hard, but you had the intention to just, yeah, eat properly, listen to your body, and just cut out those things that you didn't need.
It was really about being mindful about what I was putting in my mouth. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, great job. You're doing an awesome job and you're a super mom.
Yay. Thank you, Lisa.
Throw out those maternity pants.
I was worried my maternity pants were way too long. So.
I did the same. They were so comfy. That was my excuse. But
yeah, exactly. I'm glad that I'm not wearing them anymore.
Some other mom can benefit from them. One who is
exactly.
So I guess this week I'll share my mom mess up. I'm kind of embarrassed to bring this up because I always said I would never let Stuart watch TV while he was eating. But the way that our house is set up, we have open concepts. So the living room, dining room, and kitchen are all in one space, which is great. I love it because then when I'm like cooking or prepping food, I can watch Stuart play. But then he definitely wants to watch TV when we're at the table because you can see the TV from the table. And we don't let him watch a ton of TV, but we do use it sometimes and we try to do more educational shows. But things have been a bit hectic in the morning, him starting preschool, time changes with our routine. So we've been letting him watch a bit of TV while he's eating breakfast. So it's actually not good because he stops eating because he gets so engrossed into the TV show, even though I'm trying to talk to him about it and we're trying to learn about what's going on and have a conversation. But he stops eating and I can't quite decipher if it's because he's full or if just because he's engrossed in the TV show. So I'll say, okay, Stuart, are you done eating? Do you want me to turn off the TV? So when he starts eating again, I'm not sure if it's because he's hungry or because he just wants to watch more TV. So I hope we're really not messing up his hunger cues and his association with TV and eating, but we're going to have to come up with a plan for that. So if any moms have any strategies, I think what we're probably going to have to do is let him watch a bit of TV right before we start eating breakfast or right after we start eating breakfast, but not have it on while he's eating. But then I think he's either going to like not eat because he just wants to watch TV after or rush through eating and not listen to his hunger cues. So I really messed up.
You know, you might have to play around with that for a little bit, Lisa.
So advice from me, don't start letting them watch TV while they're eating.
Thank you for letting me learn from that of your experience that way, Lisa.
I hope you don't have to go through the questioning. Tony, I want to hear, what is your mom must have of the week?
Yeah, my mama must have. My must have, something that I can't live without, is my hemp protein power balls. I think every mom needs a little go-to snack that you can feed yourself, feed your kids. You know, like you said, Lisa, you know, afternoons before you hit the playground, you need a little extra something or is to give you some fuel, to give you some juice. And I make some protein power balls out of hemp protein, sunflower seed butter. There's a little bit of cocoa powder in there, a little bit of molasses to make it a little bit sweet, and some good fats in there. I'll either put a hemp oil or a medium chain triglyceride oil in there. And that has saved me and saved Frankie many times. So that's has definitely been my must-have, especially lately. I've been making batches of them.
Yes, and you said, so you make it, you told me before we started recording, so you make it really easily, like you just mix everything into a bowl? And
yeah, I put the dry ingredients, the hemp protein powder, the cocoa powder, mix it up, and then I add the wet ingredients and just mix it all by hand. I'm you know, using my muscle power just to mix it all together and then make small balls with my hands, you know, bigger balls for myself, smaller balls for Frankie because she likes them too. So
nice. That sounds delicious. And like it'll keep you full. It gives you a nice slow release of sugar, like healthy sugar. So your energy is sustained and you can make it through the rest of the day, but enjoy a little healthy treat too.
Absolutely.
Love it. Well, I think we covered a lot of great topics today. I'm sure there's more we can delve into, which we will cover in future episodes. But we hope that you've taken away some small changes that are easy to fit into your schedule to help you have more energy, have an improved mood, and to be able to feed yourself and your family more healthily. So we look forward to connecting in the next podcast, and have a healthy week, everyone.
Have a great week. Let us know if you have any comments or questions, things you want us to cover in future episodes.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.